Came today. I know that there's a couple more people that are supposed to be here, but I don't want to wait any longer. Yeah, take that one. This is your microphone right here.
Okay.
What we are going to do over, Jeremy, record this, but will you please check with Steve before you publish it? Okay, honest, because I'll explain that in just a second, but I just wanted to give you that. I forgot to tell you that. What we're going to start doing now, after being together, some of us, you know, for over a year now, I hope there's enough flexibility in your freedom to talk about your church circumstance, to talk about where you are in life, and to offer to us a viewpoint that says, this is how I fought to get there. Steve has a unique story that I'm going to ask him to share in just a second. Let me give you a couple of cautions. Number one, I didn't bring Steve up here so you guys could fix him. Okay?
True.
I also didn't bring him up here to expose his weaknesses or his mistakes or anything like that. Although,
that'll just happen.
And also, if you are ever in this seat, you have the option to pass on any question I ask you. You do not have to answer my questions. I sent Steve a potential list of things that, hey, I want to talk about this, and I want to give you guys the opportunity to ask questions and to learn from each other and to share your experience. So those are just some of the cautions. I am so grateful to Steve to be the first guinea pig. I tried to get my wife to do it, and she wanted to talk too much and about what we had to talk about, and I thought, man, that's twice as much conversation as I need. And so anyway, we're gonna do some of those things. Some of the conversations that are coming up, we're gonna probably talk in September. I'm gonna interview the pastor who was supposed to be here last time that couldn't come. He had some family crisis, and he's supposed to be here in September. So I'll interview him next time. Exceedingly creative guy, and I'll interview my lead staff person in November, Randy, who you guys probably barely see because he's not in this room. But I'll interview him. My hope is that you can see that among us, we're on differing stages of the road. You know, road signs along the way are important, and hopefully we can reveal some of them. So anyway, that's what we're going to do, and I'm going to put Steve on the hot seat first. And so anyway, let's pray together, and we'll get started. How about that? Father, we give you the glory today for what you've done in our lives and in our churches. We thank you, Father, that your continued approach to us, you're actually seeking us out, Father, to be your vessels. We thank you for that. And we ask, Lord, that as we come together, that through what you've done in our lives, through what we've heard from you, the understanding we have, we'd be a blessing to each other. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay. Question number one for Steve is really not a question, but it's more of a background conversation. Give us the kind of short version. Please make sure to talk about the two churches being yoked together situation. That would be helpful to all people involved.
My name's Steve Weinkoop, and I have been out in Ray. It'll be 10 years November, and so I'm the longest tenured pastor my church has ever had in their 105-year history or so. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it's a thing. And we came out here from... I was a youth pastor before being a solo pastor, and I served as a youth pastor at several large churches in the Denver metro area. And when we came out here, we were actually called to two churches that had a yoke arrangement. I'm in the process of writing a book called Egg on My Face about those years. Just kidding. I thought that was a good title, though. And so I was actually called to the Disciples of Christ Church and the Presbyterian Church USA. My background is in neither of those denominations. I actually grew up in an evangelical Presbyterian church, and prior to that was an Assembly of God church. So I'm a mutt. And so I knew that if I took the call to those churches, no offense to anyone who's DOC or PCOSA, I would have some explaining to do to my seminary professors as to whether I still believed in the Bible and Jesus. But we still felt called to go to those two churches, and they had a yoke relationship that was, I think they had been yoked together for about 20 years, and they were yoked together because they couldn't make it happen by themselves to call a full-time minister. So I don't do stress well. I share my stress with others. And so I didn't like the yoke relationship much. And so the elders of both churches knew that quite regularly. And we began a process of trying to figure out how to make the yoke work in a healthier way for both churches and for me. And what I found in a yoke relationship, I don't know if anybody in a yoke kind of relationship with two different churches. Jesus was really smart, and he said, you cannot serve two masters. And I think he thought of church boards when he said that, because you can't serve two church boards. I'm probably the first pastor in the world that refused to do a Bible study, because the Presbyterians wanted a Bible study led by me. And I thought, you know, if I did that, the other church will want me doing a Bible study there, and I'd much rather do them together. And they didn't want them together. So it was just a strange dynamic. The two churches are a few blocks away, and they had their own Sunday services. I mean, everything was just a little chaotic there. So my family would rush over to the Presbyterian church about 8, 9 in the morning, and then head over to the Christian church at 11 and do the whole thing there. So anyways, that's kind of the background there. But now I'm only at the Christian church. We left the Disciples of Christ denomination due to a number of things going on at the denominational level. We just didn't see ourselves as following those footsteps. So that led me to me being defrocked, or whatever they call it, in the Presbyterian church. I no longer had standing in that church because I was defrocked and removed from ordination in the DOC. So that led to the breaking of the yoke relationship. And that was my last Sunday at the Presbyterian Church, is Easter 2007. And a lot of people at the DOC church were afraid we couldn't make this thing go. Some folks were like, well, the Methodists are looking for a pastor. And I wasn't looking to pastor any Methodists. So anyways, we are now 5 years into this thing, and this past Easter, we actually had all Easter Sunday service at the Kitzmiller Auditorium, the high school auditorium, and we had 325 folks out for our Easter service, and it's been fun to see God blessing the church, you know, in spite of me and in spite of ourselves a lot of times, so.
Yeah. One of the reasons that I wanted Steve to be up here first was because of what you just heard. He didn't come from the background that he ended up serving in, and whether he would admit it or not, his leadership skills, whether accidental or on purpose, have led his church to a different place. And I'm not here to change any of your denominational affiliations or do anything like that. I just know that all of you are gifted and skilled to lead your church. And it's going to end up, to some degree, looking like you. That's on purpose. And we'll talk about surviving that in our sessions today. So you can, at any point, you know, raise your hand like you're in school and ask Steve a question. And please give him the grace not to answer it like, you know, I have suggested. But if you have questions. But I want to start off by asking you to consider telling us what your greatest leadership accident has been in your life.
Accident, huh?
Yeah.
Man, I'm like the Forrest Gump of church leadership. I just kind of stumble into things. And if you've seen that movie, he just kind of stumbles his way through. So even accepting a call out here was kind of, I had been working for a year delivering Domino's pizzas and pulling wire in buildings and stuff. And I thought I was not ever going to pastor a church. I thought I'd be a youth pastor or a teaching pastor or something like that. So just getting out here was a complete accident. And I don't know if God would call it that. But the other accident was I tried to leave the church. I got so far as to, we had interviewed with a church in Greeley, accepted the call there, sent out a resignation letter to the elders, to the whole church. That whole thing with that church in Greeley fell apart. And then in a sermon, I tore up my resignation letter. And fortunately, people were cool with that. That may be a dangerous sermon illustration to use, but I tore it up, and people were excited about that. And
that's the one I was hoping you would share. So.
People were thinking I was one gal in my church, Sandy Ming. She's passed on, but she said, "We're praying that you won't leave." And I'm thinking it's going to take a miracle to keep me here, because I was just done with the. This was during the yoke years. I was finished serving two churches. It was frustrating. It was all about maintenance, and that just isn't who I am. I didn't want to just maintain. I wanted to grow. I saw tons of non-Christian people in town that needed to know Christ, and I knew that I wouldn't attend either of my churches unless I was paid to be there. And so it was just... it was just frustrating to be in that position. So I kept telling my wife, if everything's equal, let's go to Greeley. I mean, there's no such thing as this is going to be a great situation. We know there's going to be hurt people there. We know it's going to be difficult. But in the end, not everything was equal. And honestly, the determining factor was pay for us. I'm a little embarrassed to say that, Tad, but you have to make money. Even in a call, obviously. And that church was so buried in building debt and had so few people come in. It was a pretty unhealthy church, but looking back now. But they just couldn't pay us to live along the Front Range well enough. So with our three kids and whatnot, where we were, we just decided, sorry, can't do this thing. So we ended up staying here, and I was praying really hard. Every Monday, I pretty much felt like I needed to quit and leave. And God just didn't answer those prayers. I sent out tons of resumes, got the emails on jobs, you know, opportunities. I'm pretty picky. I wanted to stay in Colorado, so that didn't help with my job search probably, but anyways, that was probably my greatest leadership accident, was staying put in spite of myself.
That's a great accident. I don't know how impressed you guys are of that whole thing, but I've seen so many people leave their church at the potential prime, but they hadn't seen it yet. And so they leave, and statistics tell us that people leave, you know, before they actually have any ownership in the church. And I'm not saying Steve did that, but I knew of his situation and circumstance there, and so thought that was a great leading question. I could see if I could paint you into the right corner. Tell me, I don't know which one to do here. What's the today decision that you face that's the most important for you?
So our church has experienced quite a little bit of growth over the last 5 years. To give you a feel of that, we're a very traditional church, or have been a very traditional church. So our sanctuary is a big long rectangle. Our church is really poorly designed. Everything from location to the building itself. Our church is right in the middle of a residential block. It was going to be a house, but the man who was building the house died, and so somebody saw it as an opportunity to purchase this and build it, a church there. So I've talked to folks just in the last week, three different people who have no church background, and tell them where I'm the pastor, and they're like, "Where is that?" Because they've lived in Luray all their life, and it's just a really bizarre place for a church. Our building has no lobby area. It's just kind of a big rectangle. So our sanctuary had pews in it facing the long ways of the rectangle. And in a moment of craziness, we decided to take the pews out and purchase chairs like these. And then we set it up so that it's on the short, one of the long angles, one of the long walls is where the stage is at now. And then we have a fellowship hall that we open the doors of. We have kind of these accordion doors. We open those up and we stick seats out there. So we've, I don't know, we probably have room now for about 170 folks. And so when we first did the yoke, when the yoke ended, we probably had anywhere from 70 to 80 folks coming normally. And now we've got anywhere from 130 to 150 people in our strange arrangement. So if you were to walk into our church, you'd think, boy, this is just dumb. What are these people thinking? And right now we're just in the midst of trying to accommodate the people that God's sending to us. And so right now we're really wrestling with what's the next step. So we're praying about different. Ray's kind of landlocked, being in the little valley there. So we're praying about different parcels of land that might be available. We're looking at stuff in, on Main Street, just different opportunities for us. And we're all scared to death as to how to pay for any of that. So that's probably the biggest thing that's facing us right now, is trying to create a building situation that will work for us.
Okay. I also, as we do this over the, as we look forward, you know, one of the things I want you guys to recognize is that whoever's doing the talking up here, their circumstance is not much different than yours. I mean, you know, Steve has a pretty good pile of people coming to his church and they're still wondering how to pay for stuff. I mean, that's kind of the way it works. And you know, they're still agonizing over making a decision. That's hard. And so hopefully you'll pray for each other that way. And hopefully you'll hear something in all of these guys that we've put in front of you where you'll hear them give a clue to some of the answers that you might be looking for. So tell me what you think the most important leadership characteristics are.
One of the best books I ever read on leadership was called The Contrarian Leader by, I think it's Dr. Sample. He's the president of USC. And it was so good because it affirmed what kind of leader I am, which is not much of one.
Sorry.
I'm not really a type A by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not a go-getter. I'm not a, you know, if I wasn't a pastor, I wouldn't be a CEO of a company and I wouldn't be doing, I'd probably be a librarian or a teacher someplace, a teacher in a high school or maybe teach at a college or something. But so I think recognize in church leadership, I'll limit it to that. I think the call is of utmost importance. And just figuring out who you are and what God has placed inside you and what he wants you to do. Because that's what I found to be the most important thing as mm-hmm. I've bumbled my way along. And just trusting that. I'm not a prototypical pastor in that. I think most pastors are fairly introverted people, but I'm pretty introverted. I enjoy folks, but I don't go out of my way throwing myself out there. I really like the life of study and the life of prayer. And so when I first got out here, it was really stretching myself to get out there and get around people. And then at one point, I really wrestled through, okay, God, this is the way I am, and that better be okay with you. Because I was drowning out here trying to please a lot of people and trying to run from this thing to that thing and the other thing. And at some point I just said, I can't do this. I got to be me. I've got to be true to who God's wired me to be. And so recognizing that, figuring that out, was of utmost importance in leadership, I think, for me. So yeah, I don't know if that's what you were thinking, but
well, they're open-ended questions on purpose, so that if any of the rest of you get up here and you realize that I'm just on a fishing expedition here, I don't really know that there's a right answer to any of this. And again, I want to thank Steve for being willing to be the guinea pig guy. Talking about calling, I get the opportunity probably maybe more than some of you guys to be next to pastors and potential pastors. And the calling issue is huge, because most of you have a vision of what pastoring should be like or what you should look like as a pastor, and that's generally based on your own experience. And so we call that normal, but keep in mind that normal is what you define it to be. And so when Steve says he's an introvert and he's not normal in all of that, well, he uses his own set of parameters. He wouldn't be a CEO. One of the reasons that he was attractive for this is that he and I are significantly different in that. I would likely be a CEO because I'd kill everybody else and then I could lead. And that's how it would work. And so I'm different. I'm an extrovert in all of that. And guess what? I consider that normal. When I look at you guys, when I look at Steve, and I think, well, he could fix his problems easy. He just needs to be a little bit more outgoing. That's my normal. That's how I would do it. That doesn't make it right. And so coming to grips with how God wired you, pretty important. And there's enough gray hair in the room for some of you to have contemplated that, at least at this point. So, okay.
Was that a turning point in your ministry when you resigned and then tore up the resignation? Did you see it?
The question is, was it a turning point? Because they can't hear this on the recording if we do happen to publish it.
Boy, I don't really know. I know in my heart it wasn't, because I was still chomping at the bit to get on out of here. I think the real turning point was, honestly, I've gone every year to the leadership summit that Willow Creek puts on, and I go to my home church that I grew up in Denver called Cherry Hills Community Church, and it's a church of 6,000 people, and it's this huge auditorium. My folks are still there. And each year, Hybels really challenges you to lead where you're at. And for me, I was always trying to figure out what was next, as opposed to lead where I was at. So then I was like, okay, man, I'm supposed to lead where I'm at. And I'm kind of slow that way, but I figured it out. And so once I really took that to heart, and really thought, okay, I guess this is where God has me. He hasn't opened up any other opportunities. And just figuring that out, settling that issue in my mind as far as, you know what, I'm going to quit searching for what's next and we're going to lead as best as I can here. That was a turning point for me. So that, and also Eugene Peterson, I don't know if anybody's familiar with him, reads him. He's helped me a lot in that. He's not a CEO type pastor. He's more of a contemplative guy. And so he talked about how pastors are hired by people who are probably less spiritually mature than they are. And then the folks in their church are less, they also are the ones that write your job description and tell you what to do. And yet they are less spiritually mature, most likely, than the pastor. So the dynamic is really bizarre if you think about it, because here's these folks who Jesus wouldn't even be a good enough pastor for a lot of them. And I was not close. I try to be like Jesus, but I fall short. But so for me, just deciding it's okay to be an introvert. It's okay to be studious. It's okay to be who I am and allow people to be disappointed with me, was a huge turning point for me. And so I started talking about that from the pulpit, honestly. Maybe you can tell I'm a little verbal processor, but I would purposely say, you know, if I come visit you, it probably means you're almost dead. I'm just not a visitor pastor. If I show up, it's not good news for some people. And that's a dynamic. Being a city kid, I haven't quite figured out in rural world, that folks want the doctor, not the nurse. And I was confused because so many of these people have known each other since they were knee high. And I thought, I've known you for a couple years. Why do you want me to show up and you know, do whatever you think I do? Spray holy water on you, or I don't know. So I've really tried to emphasize that we each have to play our role in the body. And we have some folks in our church that are amazing visitors and just folks who are great at loving people and going and making sure, far better than I am, you know. It's just not one of my gifts. I try to be compassionate, but it's not always the best. So...
Yeah. Well, that's where you and I are alike in those areas, is that, you know, if you need someone to kick you, I'm your guy.
Yeah.
But if you're sick, that probably won't work, you know. So, and it's not that I'm unwilling to visit, but there's also some things that you just have to do to be true to who you are. And you know, I might visit people, but I'll tell you why I would visit them. It's because I have a prompting from the Lord, which means He's put something in me for them. And that may or may not be well received. You know, just the way it is. Yes, ma'am.
So what do you put down to your church growth, that you've grown so much in the last 5 years?
Right.
Apart from the Lord leads certain people who are truly praying about where they're in the Lord.
Yeah. We're going to publish this, I suppose. The question was, what do I attribute to the church growth? I've thought about that a lot. I've written about it a little bit, reflected on it a lot. I'm not really a formula guy. I look back and there are a few things we've done. I preached a message years ago about being a bottom rung church. And what I meant by that was I had a ladder posted on the wall, and a lot of churches you go into, you know, all the churchy people are at the top of the ladder and they're all familiar with the church lingo and they're all in the inner crowd and they all do their churchy thing really well. And then a new person comes and they're clear at the bottom of the ladder. And oftentimes the bottom rung is so high in a church that they can't even grab hold of that bottom rung. So that was some language that I purposefully started using around the church. So we really, it took a long time for that to grasp, for people to grasp that. But lately, you know, just to give you a feel for some of the people coming to our church, we got several folks that the smoke from hell is still rolling off of them. We got folks that it's still, we've got some interesting folks coming that, for whatever reason are showing up regularly, that they're receiving something. So, I know this will shock many people. This is how I dress on Sunday mornings now. We had a situation that happened in our church where a young man was convicted of sexual assault in Ray, and he was a part of our church. And before that, I would show up more like Glenn's dressed. And the Sunday that all came down, I showed up in jeans and a button-down shirt and just said, it's time to quit playing church, 'cause we're only as healthy as our biggest secret. And this guy had a big secret. And, you know, so we need to show up as who we are and quit playing church. So I've actually had lots of people say that they start coming to church mainly because they need to see that a pastor that actually wore jeans on a Sunday morning in church. And then a number of those folks have stayed because they feel very comfortable at our church. But it's led to lots of interesting problems and situations and whatnot. So I think that's a big part of it, is those things. I think too, we're wrestling with the DNA. I'm wrestling. I don't think anybody else in the church is, but I'm wrestling with the DNA of our church. You know, I'm not a top-down, my way or the highway kind of person, so I'm more try to subvert stuff, and that takes a really long time. So I honestly think a part of our growth is because I've just managed to be here a long time. And not that, you know, Moses or Noah preached for a long time and it didn't get him anywhere either. So, so that anything that I've just managed to do or has happened at our church has been unique to our church. I don't think it's anything that can be replicated elsewhere. I really don't. The choices I've made, like dressing the way I do, and we sing more modern music, modern praise songs. We do sing a hymn, but it's in a modern arrangement each week. I preach very practical type messages. Still expository, but very much dealing with different situations in people's lives. So I try to make it very applicable to people, which cuts against my natural grain because I like to study Greek and Hebrew, and people don't want to hear about Greek and Hebrew Sunday mornings. So that really charges my battery. But so I keep that to myself a lot of Sundays. So yeah, those are things. Our youth ministry, we don't have one, which is freaking me out because I'm going to have three young people in my house here soon. We have a 13-year-old, a 12-year-old, and a 10-year-old. Sammy is coming to New Life to the youth group here, and so we're excited about his involvement here. At the same time, a little anxious because the history between our two churches is that our youth have come here on Sundays historically. And so I've talked to my elders about that, just being up front. I'm like, you know, several of those guys, their kids would come out to New Life. And I said, well, yeah, but you guys weren't the pastor. So how's that going to play when that happens with our kids? Because at this point, that's probably what's going to happen. That's where their friends are. You know, that's the kids they run with. And we're really pleased that they run with those kids. We want to encourage that. So, you know, there's some dynamics that we're not doing very well and haven't attributed to our growth at all. Our kids' ministry is struggling, honestly. So it's just God playing a cosmic joke on me, I think, half the time. One of the things that I Bill Hybels also, and I don't know what y'all think of him, and I guess I don't care, but Bill Hybels, I love you all, but...
but not that much.
Sometimes these things sound so callous.
I know, and yeah, that's how I sound all the time, brother.
I listen back to my sermons, ahead. I'm like, gosh, I'm a jerk. He said he believes pastors should be one of the most accepting people in a community. And when I was in Denver, I thought, I'm an accepting person, but figure out if that was true about me or not. Because I didn't, you know, I was nice to people and, you know, I wouldn't practice road rage and stuff like that. And in Ray, I was like, I could actually find out if I'm an accepting person or not. I mean, you know, I rub shoulders with enough people, I could actually find out if that's true about me. So, like, last night at our home, we had... We have a gentleman who he's been coming to our church for a little while, and he actually sells medical marijuana out here in Ray. So we had him over for 4th of July last night, he and his family. And I mean, it's just fascinating the people that God's bringing across my path. So yeah, and it's fun. I my heart is for evangelism, and I just love getting to know people who Jesus misses. And I love, you know, I stop in a 7-Eleven. You might be able to tell that. I stop in 7-Eleven, and there's several clerks that I just love to chat with them. And they all threaten to come to my church, and none of them do. But, you know, I'm just building relationships with them. And so I've also been really intentional on Facebook. And I regularly do counseling on Facebook with people from the community that don't ever come to church, but they're friends with me on there, and they'll just ask me questions out of the blue, usually probably for them in a drunken stupor late at night, but it does have interesting interactions with folks. So just trying to keep myself, keep building relationships with people who Jesus misses. Eventually, I never invite anybody to church. I've never done that. Part of that's intentional because they expect me to, and that's like my job. And so I've just chosen not to invite anybody to church and just be people's friend. And sometimes they come and sometimes not. And I just trust that the Holy Spirit, the hound of heaven, is bugging them and chasing them down and just seeing what role I might be able to play in that in the long term. So I don't know if that helped at all, that answer.
That's good. Well, and one, you know, having Steve's kids, I mean, I see he's got the two that I recognize most readily are is it Bailey? Is that right? The girl? She is. You need chains for her. She is a beautiful young lady, and so she shows up around here, and Sam as well. And I understand the real awkward nature of that. We are, from a CEO perspective, we're in the same business. And so the awkward trust that is placed from a parent to his kid to come to our stuff, and from a pastor to his own, you know, not just his kids, but, you know, I understand the awkwardness of that, and I have no more control over it than you have on the other side. I mean, if he had the ability to have a youth ministry that was up and functional, I think he'd probably do that. And so I can't explain those kinds of things. I just want you to know that in your town, if that's happening, whichever one of those people that you are, you don't have any more control than the other one does.
And my background's youth ministry. I mean, I could run a youth group in my sleep probably. I led youth ministries larger than the church I pastor in Denver. So, and I don't say that to brag or anything. I just say that is something I've intentionally chosen not to do out here because I felt my call is to preach and teach and pastor this church. And people through the years have bugged me about, you need to start a youth ministry. And when we first got here, we tried, and we had a moderate success, and it was when I was trying to please everybody, and you know, I was just going a million different directions. So once I think part of the growth has been once I focused on who God put me together to be too, has been really helpful.
Yeah.
So, and you know, he hasn't really seen David yet, and Dave's like the prototypical pastor's child. That's, you know, we do need to get the guy who sells drugs saved in Ray, because Dave is going to know him. And Dave's going to be our little hellion handful. So he's only 10, so we got 8 years to straighten him out. But
I counseled a 10-year-old brother. I really appreciate this. You still may not want to publish this. I counseled a 10-year-old in my last church. We had a cooperative agreement with another county. And he lit his neighborhood on fire and burnt down several houses. A lot of help that was.
Dave's got that potential. So.
Yeah. Last question from me. If you had it to do over, what's the one thing you would have done differently?
Several sarcastic answers first come to my mind. Wow. Never come here? No. That's being very sarcastic.
But I thought I could trust you to do that too. I mean, many of us. Absolutely. I mean, it's a leading question because many of us. I mean, what prompts you to come to Podunk, whatever your town's called?
Well, in one of my first weeks out here, when I met the Lutheran pastor, he said, "So what did you do to get sent out here?" So, you know, I went to Denver Seminary. I grew up in mega churches. I thought I was going to pastor 1,000 people, honestly. I mean, and, you know, the vast majority of churches are 100 people or less. So, and I thought, when I actually went to seminary, I thought I was going to go on and get a PhD and teach in a seminary or something like that. So I'm just not where I thought I would be whatsoever. But I don't know if I would change anything other than just trusting the process, I think. The journey that God has me on, which I do that anyways. I'm kind of a process-oriented person. But that would be the thing that I would... We have an intern this summer, and my job I've seen is to just help him understand what his call is and who he is and how God's put him together. Because that's one thing, when I showed up out here, I didn't have much of that figured out yet. And I'm still learning a lot there. But just trusting that God chose me and put me out here, and that's okay. I think that's something I would have tried to figure out sooner.
This is the only question that I really had an answer to. Every healthy pastor I've ever met wouldn't change anything like you just did. They understand the process, or they accept it. They made mistakes. Steve made mistakes. I've made mistakes. But when that level of regret that says, oh, this is what affected my future to such a negative degree, I'd change this. When that happens in people, you find people who are facing the wrong direction. They're looking backwards at the problems that were in their life, not forward to the problem solver of their future. And I'll tell you, this is universal. And I've met with guys and pastors, and have association with pastors that are in really, really large churches doing things that you think, how in the world? I mean, I'm thinking of a friend of mine now, a church of about 6,000-8,000 people in Tulsa. And they had a K-12 school, and one of their PE teachers sexually assaulted a student, came out in the newspaper. And I told him last time I saw him, I said, you know, I appreciated how you walked that thing through, because no one would have wanted that to be as public as it was. And that was some of the stepping stones. Would he like that to be done differently? Absolutely. They had all the policy and procedure in place, all the background checks in place, and it still happened. So, you know, if you find yourself in a level of regret all the time, saying, oh, if I could have just done this right, my estimation of your position, and this is the only teachy thing in this, is that you're facing the wrong direction. Because healthy pastors are looking forward, and they're saying, man, I can see that God wants to do these things. I don't know how we're going to get there. I don't know how we're going to pay for it, but I can see Him coming. And you're facing the right direction. So, anybody else got a question for Steve? Great. Thanks, man. I appreciate you. I appreciate you. We're going to do this again. And if you're truly interested in being on the hot seat, don't take into consideration that you're going to get the same questions, because you might not, and you might. But we are going to do this. I hope that it does what I thought it would do, and that is to give you enough food for thought that it would help you. So anyway, there we go.